All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my breakdown of the All-22 from the Falcons Week 14 win over the Carolina Panthers and answering your listener questions.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. And today's episode is a Q&A episode where I will be answering a fan's question. We're going to talk a bit more about Dan Quinn and the possibility of him staying beyond the 2019 season. In answering that question, and as part of answering that question, we'll look ahead to sort of how maybe some ways that the Falcons can fix the defense going into 2020. But first, I want to sort of break down sort of my thoughts on the All-22 from this Falcons Week 14 win over the Carolina Panthers. And to be honest with you, part of the reason why we didn't do this normally, as we usually do most weeks on Thursday, was because I didn't really have a particularly strong or compelling angle in this game from watching the film. It just was like, hey, the Falcons played reasonably well. And it was very similar of a performance as it was in the previous Panther game. So there wasn't any sort of new wrinkles. With that in mind, I'm going to essentially just sort of give you guys a brief overview of the many notes I took watching the film of the game, just sort of hit a bunch of players and give some general thoughts, general impressions, hit some bullet points with my film review. So let's get into that Locked On Falcons lead story. So when I look at the film of the Falcons 40-20 win over the Panthers, generally, I see, you know, some general impressions, some bullet points. Starting with the quarterback, I thought Matt Ryan really didn't settle into this game until maybe late in the second quarter. And outside of the near interception he threw to Eric Reed at the end of the third quarter, which Reed didn't catch, I thought he played a pretty clean game from that point on, midway through or about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter through the rest of the game. Obviously, he didn't have to do a ton of heavy lifting in the fourth quarter just because the Falcons were playing with the lead at that point in time. I thought in terms of the running back position, I thought Devontae Freeman had arguably his best performance of the season, showed that trademark quickness and that burst, being able to avoid tacklers and look like the player that we had seen prior to his injury riddled 2018, at least in this game. You know, I thought the blocking was on point, particularly early in the game. I thought Julio and Luke Stocker did a really good job, particularly in the first quarter plus of this game. I made more notes on good blocks by Luke Stocker in this game than I feel like I've made in the last six games combined. That wasn't necessarily reflected in his Pro Football Focus run blocking grade, as this only wound up being like the seventh best game as a run blocker for Luke Stocker this season based off of their grades. But I thought it was notable that he did run block a lot more in this game than he has in any other game. He had 28 run blocking snaps. And I know one of the things that Pro Football Focus does is they sort of normalize their grades based off of how many snaps you get. And so, you know, if you do good in on a low number of snaps, you can get a really high grade. If you do, you know, good on a higher number of snaps, it may not reflect sort of the same way. So that might have been a reason why he didn't necessarily get as high a grade as a run blocker, as I, just watching the film, thought, oh, this was clearly Luke Stocker's best run blocking game, or at least the only one, the best one that I can remember. But Julio's grade did certainly reflect his prowess as a run blocker. He wound up with a 92 grade from Pro Football Focus as a run blocker. You know, that only is exceeded by his performance against the Saints in Week 10, where he had a 92.2 grade. I thought Matt Gano's second level blocking was really good. And if the Falcons were still an outside zone blocking scheme, I think that would have been particularly meaningful within that scheme. As I've explained many times on this podcast in the past, you really want those interior offensive linemen to essentially be heat seeking missiles, taking out defenders, taking out linebackers on that second level to really open up the run lanes for this offense. And I thought Gano did a really good job of that. I thought the Falcons pass rush really dominated the last 20 or so minutes of the game once they had built up a three score lead at that point in time, and guys were really able to pin their ears back and get after Kyle Allen. It was notable looking at the Pro Football Focus metrics where they had Adrian Claiborne with quote unquote just six pressures in this game. When I did my film study, I credited him with 9. Pro Football Focus gave Allen Bailey 2 pressures. I gave him 5. They gave Tack McKinley 4. I gave him 5 with my charting. Vic Beasley had 4 and I gave him 3. Campbell and Tyler Davidson each were credited by Pro Football Focus with 3 pressures. I gave them 2 and 1 respectively. Grady Jarrett was really the only guy that we agreed on with our charting where we both had him with 1 pressure. Another indicator that film study is certainly subjective. Usually I feel like Pro Football Focus is a little bit more charitable than I am when it comes to what qualifies as a hurry, but that wasn't necessarily the case in this particular game. I thought it was notable that this is one of the only games this season where Grady Jarrett didn't really lead the way as far as the pass rush goes. When you look back at the games where the Falcons pass rush really came alive against Philadelphia in the first Saints game in week 10, the previous Carolina game in week 11, you saw Grady Jarrett at or near the top of the rankings when it came to this team's pressures, and in almost all those games he had 4 or 5 pressures, and you saw it kind of trickle down or trickle outwards to the edge rushers. But I think this was a game where the edge rushers really sort of took care of business with Beasley and Claiborne and Tack. Bailey's, most of his stuff came working on the interior, so maybe that's one of the reasons why Grady Jarrett didn't cook, because Allen Bailey was getting all those positive reps at the end of the game. But it's nice to sort of see those edge rushers kind of stand on their own. I thought this was one of Deion Jones's better performances going up against Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey still got his, but mostly it was against zone. I counted 7 of his receptions coming against the Falcons cover 3, which was their preferred coverage. This past Sunday, they utilized it on 21 of the Panthers' 51 pass plays. The Falcons cover 1 was their second most frequently used coverage, being used on 18 plays. The cover 2 zone was on 9 plays. I charted cover 2 man on 2 plays and cover 0 on 1 play. Mostly in the first half, the Falcons were predominantly playing man coverage. They accounted for cover 1 was 55% of their plays. Overall man coverage was about 70% of their first half snaps. Then in the second half, they switched mainly to cover 3, which accounted for 52% of their plays in the second half, and zone overall was accounting for about 77% of their coverages in the second half. Now, you could certainly argue that the switch to the zone was mostly due to the Falcons trying to protect their lead, because they were still playing predominantly man early in the third quarter when the game was a little bit closer. But I do wonder how much of that switch was due to the departure of Desmond Trufant, who exited the game with a broken arm just before halftime. I know when Trufant was out earlier this season with injuries before the bye week, the Falcons still featured a lot of man coverage and predominantly a man coverage team, particularly in week 7 and week 8. But they were getting gashed by teams those weeks against the Rams, against the Seahawks. And I do wonder, you know, I do certainly think that the 49ers receivers present similar matchup problems for this current Falcons cornerback group, sans Trufant. And when you couple that with Isaiah Oliver also dealing with his injury issues, where he's been limited in practice this week with a shoulder injury, he wound up being pulled from the Panthers game late in favor of Jordan Miller. It doesn't make a great recipe for success when you're looking ahead to this week 15 matchup. So it's kind of reason number 462 why I'm not overly optimistic about this Falcons 49ers matchup. But certainly maybe some of these young cornerbacks will step up and certainly surprise me. So there is your Locked On Falcons lead story from today. And we'll continue today's episode by getting into a listener question sent via email from a former guest of a fan talk. So it's almost like we're doing a fan talk on a Friday like normal. But we know that football teams like the Falcons are out there trying to do their best to gain a little bit of confidence and increase their performance on the football field. But you guys can gain a little bit of confidence and increase your performance in the bedroom by checking out BlueChew.com. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they'll work up to twice as fast as a pill. Blue Chew is prescribed online. It ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. Blue Chew is made in the USA, and since it's prepared and shipped direct, it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, you can take advantage of the special offer by visiting BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice. Now, I'm sure there's many weekends where you guys look at the picks from the talking heads and you think you could probably do a lot better than those guys. Well, why don't you put your money where your mouth is and head over to MyBookie? It's the place for you to turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between the football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball, it's time to get off the sideline, get off the bench, and get into the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. Parlays are perfect because you can bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to MyBookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to take advantage of MyBookie's very generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So let's get into a listener question. This comes from Jerron Johnson, a former Fan Talk guest who sent this in via email. He says, "Hey, Aaron, based on Blank's comments on Quinn and him not firing Quinn during the season, I am under the belief that there is a greater chance Quinn will be back than people seem to think. What I ultimately think will happen is Quinn will be back for another year and Dimitroff will be fully removed from the GM title and shifted to another aspect of the team. I'm not a fan of Quinn staying, but if he does, it would only be okay with it if Manuel is a full-time DC, a new offensive coordinator is brought in, a new GM brought in, who will lead the head coach search should Quinn falter again. Another aspect that I need to see change is Quinn needs to give up full control of the roster. Quinn is currently at the same level as Dimitroff, so there's no level of accountability with him because he solely answers to Blank and who ultimately chooses not to get involved. At this point, would you be okay with Quinn staying? And what scenario would you like to see should he stay?" I like Dan Quinn, but I do think it's time to move on. I don't have a lot of confidence in Dan Quinn's ability to pick another offensive coordinator. I don't have a lot of confidence in Dan Quinn's ability to maximize the defensive talent currently on this roster. So for me, the scenario where he stays, I just think is non-existent, at least. You know, it's just like you're just changing so many things, and why are you not changing the head coach? You know, we're getting a new defensive coordinator, we're getting a new offensive coordinator, we're getting a new GM, but the coach is staying? Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So, like, that's part of the reason why, I know I'm not doing a good job answering your question because you're specifically asking me what type of scenario would you like to see should he stay. But it's just like, why is he keeping a job? And if we're going to change everything about the organization but keep Dan Quinn, why? Why not just go for the clean sweep? You're changing three out of the four components that you need. And I know Raheem Morris is not technically a change, but it's like it kind of is a change. So, you know, I know I've talked about the inevitability of Dan Quinn's firing multiple times in this podcast, especially this week. So I apologize if I sound like a broken record in that regard. But as I said on yesterday's episode, I think a big reason why Arthur Blank seems to be of the mindset, according to Jerron and others, of keeping Dan Quinn is because I don't think he wants it to leak out that he's going to fire Dan Quinn like it did with Mike Smith back in 2014, and it winds up leading to the team quitting on the coach. I don't have any particular inside information on that. That's just purely speculative on my part. You know, as for Raheem Morris sort of being the defensive coordinator, I think he's done a good job, relatively speaking, to help improve the defense. But I don't think he's really done a great job. You know, they still have frequent communication breakdowns. You know, guys are still frequently out of position. I think he's turned an abysmal defense into a unit that is occasionally competent. But that's mostly when the front is doing their job, not because he's really solved any issues in the secondary. You know, going into the bye week or coming out of the bye week, I think they were 30th in defensive DVOA. And now they're 26th. So there's no doubt that there's been improvement since Morris made the switch to the defensive side of the ball. But I just haven't seen enough improvement to make me feel like he should be handed the reins of this defense. Now, maybe you would argue, well, Aaron, you know, Raheem is being held back by not having quite enough talent given the Falcons' current defensive roster. You give him better players, you watch him flourish. You know, that's certainly an opinion. It's a plausible idea. With a full offseason of work and a talent infusion, I think it's plausible that you could see significant gains for this defense in 2020. That's plausible. I don't think it's likely, but it's plausible. I think the issue is going to be what kind of talent infusion are you going to potentially get? You know, I've gone on record saying that I don't think the Falcons cap situation is as dire as others will paint it, but it has been recently brought to my attention that maybe the Falcons won't get as much cap space and cap relief from the restructures with Matt Ryan and Desmond Trufant and Alex Mack, which I've estimated could be, you know, $25 million or more if the Falcons do it the right way, simply because 2020 is going to be the final year of the current collective bargaining agreement, and it kind of changes how the rules apply to deals that extend beyond the current collective bargaining agreement. Now, my assumption has been that that only applies to newly signed deals and not restructures like I've been talking about, but I could certainly be wrong on that front. I'll certainly do some more research to discover if I've missed the mark on that assessment. You know, I think the big reason why I made that assumption is that I haven't read anything or seen anything that suggests that restructures work differently when it comes to, you know, next offseason than they would in most any other years. But again, I could be wrong on that. So I'll definitely dig deeper on that. But regardless, I think even if I'm right and the Falcons can, you know, free up a significant amount of money from the restructures, I don't think you're going to really see this team go out there and get a bunch of big name players on the defensive side of the ball. And that's where we will continue today's conversation. You know, we'll be looking ahead to possible options for the Falcons in 2020 offseason, focusing on the defense for the Falcons looking to bounce back. But speaking of bouncing back, the original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of bounce and sink. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/LockedNFL and use LockedNFL at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from the Locked On sponsors at LockedOnPodcast.com/offers. So when we're talking about what free agent moves the Falcons can make, and again, we'll see what sort of their cap situation is, if they can be as will they have as much leeway, you know, headroom as I think they will after they restructure some contracts, remains to be seen. But regardless, let's just assume I'm right, which is the way that I operate every day of my life. Just assuming I'm right. But I think even then, you're still going to see this team more likely target low-level, mid-level, whatever you want to call them, free agents, like in the same vein that we did when we signed guys like Jack Crawford and Courtney Upshaw and Tyler Davison this past year. You know, I don't really know if they're going to be able to attract top-tier free agent talent given the relative limitations on their spending. Just because I think really, as I've explained before, I think the Falcons need bodies. I think they're going to, you know, they have, what, three linebackers under contract. They have four defensive linemen that are going to be potentially under contract next year. They have more DBs, but, like, you know, they're going to need to sign like 10 fronts or add 10 front seven guys. And I don't know if you can do it all in the draft, because there's other areas of your roster that you kind of want, or at least I kind of want to address in the draft. I don't want to completely ignore some other spots on the offense and in the secondary. So it's one of those things where I don't know if it's realistic that they're going to just need bodies. And when you need as many bodies as the Falcons are going to need, it's going to lower what you can spend on each individual body. And so I think you can get good players even if you're not spending a ton of money, even if you're spending the veteran minimum. Because again, I think if NFL teams actually scouted NFL players, which if you've heard some of my previous rants, I don't think teams really do, you can find some diamonds in the rough. But I think that's one of the reasons why on previous episodes I've sort of given out this opinion that it's going to take a couple of years for this team to rebuild their defense. Because you're not going to really have a huge talent infusion going out there and signing Tyler Davison type of players. You know, outside of the draft, you're not going to really get that big boost from the talent level. And contrary to popular opinion, rookies, even if you do invest heavily in the draft, rookies typically aren't good. You know, looking at Tyler Davison specifically, he currently has a 71.9 Pro Football Focus grade. Do you know how many rookies that have played at least 400 snaps, which is functionally about half of the snaps of an average NFL defense at this point in the season, have a higher grade than Tyler Davison does? Three. Nick Bosa, Dexter Lawrence of the Giants, and Taylor Rapp, the safety for the Rams. Vic Beasley has a 61.1 grade from Pro Football Focus this year. How many rookies have a higher grade than him? 19. Now, 19 is not a particularly low number when you consider that there's only really about 38 rookie defenders this year that have played 400 or more snaps, which is kind of part of the issue. Rookies don't play enough, and the few that do typically struggle or are average at best. And, you know, plenty of rookies will come in and be capable backups and capable role players that can contribute and be functionally good in spots, but very few are going to be difference makers, which is what we're talking about in terms of, you know, this hypothetical world where Raheem Morris is still around to sort of maximize the Falcons defense sooner rather than later. Those types of rookies are rare. And I think that's part of the reason why I think it's going to take some time to fix this defense. I don't think it's just talent. I don't think it's just scheme. I don't think it's just coaching. I think it's all of the above that they're going to have to resolve. And I think that's going to take more than one offseason to fix all of those issues. And I think if you're going to have to rely on multiple drafts worth of picks, if you want this defense to be legitimately good. Now, if you're just looking for borderline competence, which is what we've seen from this team a couple of times this, you know, since the bye week, and in the first, you know, in week two against the Eagles, I think you can go out there and sign free agents like Davison and Crawford and Poole and get solid role players that can be competent guys that can be, you know, that can, in the words of Bill Belichick, do their jobs competently enough. And that will buy you some time while those drafted players develop and grow and whatnot. I think the Falcons will also have to sort of be proactive when it comes to the waiver wire, come the spring, come the summer, when other teams are cutting guys, particularly guys that have a little bit of a pedigree, whether those are high round picks or mid round picks, guys that for whatever reason didn't quite work out, that you're not looking at those guys and popping on the tape and like, oh, that guy's a bust. Like, we're not talking about the Jamal Andersons, and I'm referring to the defensive end who stuck around with Indianapolis and Cincinnati after the Falcons cut him back in 2011 for a couple of years. But those guys that are like, oh, that guy, you're only really giving him a second chance because he's a first round pick, not because he's better than, say, your run of the mill fourth or fifth round pick. You know, I think when you're looking at guys that some of those other candidates for what I'm talking about are the Derek Kindreds of the world, the former safety for the Browns, who back in 2017 was a really good starting safety, and then sort of the last couple of years has kind of bounced around the league. And picking up those guys off the street, I think, is a smart strategy. That's a way that you can get decent players, or at least kick the tires on decent players, on the relative cheap. And that's going to be sort of the strategy that I would employ if I was sort of running the show in Atlanta. You know, I'm not the world's biggest fan of reclamation projects, but I think under a new regime, those types of moves can make a lot more sense if your wallet is a little bit tighter. So that's sort of my thought process on it. I just, you know, going back to what you asked, Jaron, I just don't, you know, if we're talking about what will happen, I don't see a scenario where keeping Quinn will happen, or I think it's a very, very, very far-fetched scenario where that happens. And I just can't really picture a scenario where I'm good with Dan Quinn being the head coach, but I'm going to go ahead and change everything else. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing, where we're going to have to completely revamp everything else about this organization from top to bottom, but just keep Dan Quinn for reasons, you know. So just go ahead and cut the cord, so to speak, and see what happens with the new guy and new GM, new head coach, whatever the case may be. And let's just, you know, get a clean slate. Let's not chase, you know, 2016 like we would be with Dan Quinn. Let's get a new guy in here, and he's going to be like, I'm not worried about 2016. I'm not worried about, you know, Super Bowl 51 or 28-3. That happened before me. That's not my baggage. I'm worried about building a new team, and, you know, let's leave the past, you know, as Kylo Ren would say, let the past die. It's very topical given what movie's coming out shortly. But anyway, you know, locked on pop culture, locked on Star Wars. there you guys have it. Wrapping up your week here on the Locked On Kylo Ren podcast. You guys will be back Monday morning with a rapid reaction, although technically we'll be back Sunday evening with a rapid reaction. Appreciate you guys for Jerron and others for sending in their questions. Well, nobody else sent in a question, or at least I didn't see anybody else send in a question. I apologize if I missed it. But Jerron sent his in via email at lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can send yours in via social media, via Twitter, Locked On Falcons, Facebook, Locked On Falcons. And so we'll be back at the wee hours of Monday morning here on the East Coast, Sunday night for you West Coasters, with a rapid reaction on this 49er game. Hopefully it is not a debacle, but I'm not confident. So we'll see. All right. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.